Welcome to Sustainability Bridges, a URCIF podcast aimed at building bridges between policymakers, investors, academics, and civil society around the theme of sustainable investing. URCIF is the leading pan-European association promoting sustainable finance and sustainable investing at the European level. In this podcast, the Executive Director of URCIF will invite distinguished guests for a 30-minute conversation on current events shaping the sustainable investing community.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Aleksandra Palińska, and I am the Executive Director of URCIF. For this episode of Sustainability Bridges, I am honored to be joined by Nora Sandal, Head of Sustainability at Datia, and Vlada Olivia Wester, leading the product strategy and innovation at Datia. Together, we are going to discuss the challenges and opportunities regarding the implementation of the EU Taxonomy Regulation, Sustainable Finance Disclosure Regulation, known as SFDR, and overall regarding disclosure and availability of ESG data. Dear Nora and Vlada, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Thank you for having us.
Within Datia, you are the experts developing solutions and helping your clients, being asset managers and other investors, apply the EU taxonomy and the Sustainable Finance Disclosure Regulation. Could you share with us the main challenges faced by the industry that you encounter and observe?
Sure. I can start with that. I think in terms of regulation, there's two, and you already mentioned them, Alexandra, there's two major ones for the finance industry right now. There's the EU taxonomy and the Sustainable Finance Disclosure Regulation, which the SFDR is a bit more of an efficient way to say that. And I think in terms of the taxonomy, it's still early stages. I mean, it's been very debated. It's been out there. It's very new thing. So it's uncharted territory in terms of combining finance and sustainability and sort of establishing a classification system of what's sustainable and not. I mean, the ultimate purpose of the taxonomy was to fight greenwashing and facilitate capital to sustainable activities. Then I think there's a lot of challenges in terms of that, both for corporates, but also for financial market participants. One major one is obviously the data or the information challenge, actually getting the information from the companies. We're still waiting to see complete reporting in terms of alignment, etc., of the NFRD companies, which obviously creates confusion when it's lagging and you need to sort of take a stance right now. You need to start working on it. Financial actors are expected to work with this. Only the information isn't really there yet. And even when it will be, for now, it's a quite small scope of companies. It's large entities with more than 500 employees, which is a challenge. And as I mentioned, it's still early stages and we haven't really seen complete reporting yet. But I've read some reports as well saying that reporting practices vary. So various interpretations of how to report this information in terms of ratios and what's the denominator and the numerator, etc. So there is still some difficulties getting a mutual understanding and basically the interpretation and the clearness that is needed in terms of this major regulation. And also in terms of how to use estimates, how to present it if you do decide to use estimates, how to wage those against the real information, etc. And in terms of the SFDR, I think it's compared to the taxonomy, if you compare these two, the taxonomy is very technical, it's very standardized, there's little room for interpretation, even though we've seen that in the reporting, there has been. But the SFDR is more holistic and it's specifically towards the finance industry. And there, I think one big challenge for at least financial market participants that we've seen is that it needs to be substance behind the disclosures. So not only the data, you don't only need the data of your investee companies or your exposures, but you also need to have a strategy, a governance process, a risk management process in terms of sustainability that you can fall back on and that you can actually stand and lean against when you start reporting these aspects. And in terms of that, I think there's been a lot of precaution. No one really knows what the articles. Some people are very scared of branding themselves an Article 9 fund, for example. And it's just a lot of precaution and insecurities right now on how to interpret the regulation itself. And the another question is whether it's a labeling regulation or a disclosure regulation, I think. It's clearly become a labeling sort of practice in terms of Article 6, 9, 8 or 9. That wasn't necessarily how this regulation was intended. I mean, it's in the name, it's a disclosure regulation. And it was really meant for end investors to understand how the financer or the investor integrates sustainability risks into the investment process and consider negative impacts and try to enhance positive impacts. So there's lots of uncertainty in terms of that. And then there's also obviously going back to sort of a symbiosis with the taxonomy, the data challenge. So the EU started regulating the finance industry to sort of put pressure on the corporates. But for now, the data and the reporting isn't necessarily there. So there is data coverage issues. There is transparency issues, difficult understanding the data that companies actually report. And completeness issues, I think.
Before I pass over to Vlada, I mean, I'm kind of also thinking, would you think it would be useful to consider, well, firstly, you know, clarifying certain SFDR definitions and provisions, but also to maybe complement the rules by the minimum criteria? So basically, you know, putting a little bit more meat on the bone, I mean, to put a little bit more substance in it.
Yeah, I think there's some uncertainties and some specific areas that that could be useful for. One specific one would be defining what is a sustainable investment. I think that's something big shares of the industry right now is working on, and they don't want to deviate from what their peers or competitors are doing, but they also want to make it credible, reliable, and sort of meet the regulators' expectations. And that's based on the guidance out there today. That might be difficult, whether that's done by provisions or just more FAQs or Q&As by the ESAs. I think those have been really useful, and that might be a good place to start before revisioning anything.
Thank you, Nora. Vlada, would you like to share your perspective and add something to what Nora said?
Yeah, absolutely. To add a little bit of maybe, you know, practical tips and customers' voice into this question of what are the biggest challenges. I feel like the biggest challenges for many of our users start much before and much earlier the most hands-on parts, you know, where you have to aggregate the data, calculate, do the reporting. The challenge starts with the fact that to be compliant with SFDR, you need to create a proper sustainability strategy. And that is what your reporting will be based on. And that turns out to be sometimes an organizational challenge, or like you have to do a lot of fundamental work to get there. So you have to answer within your organization the questions of what matters of ESG matter to me and to our company, and why some of them matter more than some others. And this is a little bit like down to the roots work that they have to do so that they are able to communicate their sustainability strategy then through, for example, a PI statement in a very like cohesive way. And I feel like, yeah, that can be actually quite hard to keep in touch with your value, with your mission, and then build on top of that. And then I think there would be another thing, and that is like the need to evaluate the gap between what the company aims on and what they actually can do in a like traceable and evident way. So it's one thing to commit to certain impact that you would like to have with your investments, and it's another thing to actually be able to make it demonstrable, to make it provable. And that means you need to gather a lot of data, plan how you're going to keep track of that data, make sure that this data gathering is consistent and it's a fairly high quality data. And then so basically you enable yourself to compare this year after year, because that is the whole purpose, right? You want to show the progress. And very often that means that already at the very early point, you need to start even planning the engagements that you would like to have with your investees. So it's those organizational challenges which I think are very interesting in something which sounds like, yeah, we just need to report that, but it's so much more.
Thank you, Vlada. Now, turning to the next question, could you share with us what are the common questions from professionals working on SFDR reporting and how do you address them? I mean, I think to some extent you have already touched upon some of them, like, for instance, the definition of sustainable investments. Would you like to share some further examples?
Yes, absolutely. We receive quite a lot of questions from our prospects and from our customers about all types of questions about regulation. And I think the first and the biggest one is actually, what do we even need to report? Like, it's hard for some of our clients to understand, like, which of these reports they are obliged to fulfill and what reporting is something that they might want to skip. I understand where this confusion is coming from, right? Because different artifacts actually have different level of obligation. They're all like obligation consideration. Like pre-contractual and periodic reports, they just need to be there for all the funds. But for example, PI statement only needs to be there for some entities. And then we also have the European ESG template, right? EET, which although it's not really a regulatory report, it sort of goes alongside. And some people actually confuse that with the regulatory report. So they sometimes wonder, is that mandatory? Is there something that I must do? And then we say, oh, no, it's something that you only do by choice. It's a communication tool. So that question, I think, is one of the, you know, conversation starters very often. What do I have to do? What do I report on? And then people go a little bit deeper in it and they say, we decided that we want to do a PI statement just so that we are ahead of the curve. So how do we go about that? And yeah, PI statement, there is so much work to put in there, right? And of course, you start, like Noura mentioned before, the quality of data. And this is where you have to actually dig into the things. So first of all, there are different sources. And some of our clients, they're very used to know what is the background of the data, and they want to be able to stand up for this quality. They feel very accountable. They want to own the quality. And they have this very high ambition that they will know absolutely all the sources of data, which is almost unrealistic when it comes to sustainability data, at least today. So they ask, where does this number come from? The question of this nature, we address this even in the product, just because we realized that we need to somehow support them in this ambition. We started to classify the data origins, to show the data sources, to have basically the interface so that they can trust it. Because this is one of the biggest challenges and fears that they have, that they will produce something that is not trustable. So we need to help them there. Then there is another aspect of the data, and that is, of course, coverage. So everyone is talking right now about coverage because they understand that it is critical to have some good level of coverage so that, this report correctly represents what they're doing with the investments. So we just recently added some coverage data for the PI indicators into the interface so that this gives some good starting point to our users to, again, understand where do they stand. Can they trust in that report? Can they stand up behind that report? And based on that, they can at least know, do they need to do some additional work to, for example, gather more additional data, or is it okay for them to go with what they have?
Thank you, Vlada. I presume most of our listeners will be familiar with what is a PI statement. However, just to maybe explain for those who might not necessarily be as familiar, we're talking about the principal adverse impact indicators and a statement on how asset managers are considering the principal adverse impacts while taking investment decisions.
Thank you. This brings me to the second part of this coverage question. And that is, like, if it's not higher or if it can be higher, how can I increase that? The why question, so why is it not higher, is often explained by a significant share of private companies in the portfolios. and it's not much that you could do about that. But basically there is a possibility for that too. Like if you have direct contact with the company and you might ask all the questions from your company that is not reporting. But many of them don't do sustainability reporting, of course. And then the answer of like, yeah, how to increase that, you can use the questionnaire and you can sort of try to put the pressure on the investee company to do reporting maybe a little bit ahead of the curve. Then there is a third question that comes with PI statement, and that is, should I do this per fund or should I do this per entity? And some of our customers, they want to sort of take care of their own clients and give them a better insight into the sustainability profile of specific funds. And then they need to calculate the PIs, not just like per entity, but per fund, and present that per fund and generate the documents per fund. And that is a lot of operational work to do. This is, of course, where you would like to have some automation to keep track of everything and not to get the numbers wrong.
Thank you, Vlada. Now, maybe touching upon something you said, in terms of the availability of data, do you think the situation will improve with the implementation of the Corporate Sustainability Reporting Directive, which is accompanied by the European Sustainability Reporting Standards?
Yes, absolutely. There are very high hopes that the coverage will increase as the scope of that regulation also increases. And there is a very good thing about slowly increasing the scope of the regulation is that many companies, they start to get it. And even though they are not obliged to report something, they very often would feel the pressure, for example, because they are in the supply chain of a larger company that is already obliged to report. That company wants to calculate their scope 3. So they start to reach out to their providers, who might be much smaller companies. And they already say, yeah, we need your numbers too. So there is a cascading effect of the regulation, which I think is just fantastic. And I hope that in a couple of years, when we listen to this pod, we will not be discussing how we're all lacking data. We will just have everything that we need.
Indeed. And I think an interesting development to that end is that EFRAG, which is the body advising the European Commission on the development of the European Sustainability Reporting Standards, has already started work on the SME standards. I mean, focusing first on the listed SMEs, however, also intending to produce proposals for the voluntary reporting by the SMEs, which hopefully will also help to address the gap. Now, moving on to the next question. We are currently in this kind of a very special phase, basically, whereby most of the financial market participants are now trying to put their head around, you know, how to implement SFDR, EU taxonomy, and with all these rules being phased in over several years with different aspects. And as you mentioned, that even in terms of the data being provided by the investee companies, I mean, this is also in stages. I think as these are the still early stages of the implementation of these new rules, I think quite a lot of market participants are a little bit overwhelmed by all of that and focusing on, well, the additional burden in terms of the compliance. However, what kind of opportunities do you think actually that these regulatory developments also bring for the financial industry? Do you think, you know, some kind of a positive aspects and angles, and how to kind of turn it into the opportunity for the financial industry to better explain actually how they consider and incorporate sustainability risks and also impact-related considerations in their investments and investment decisions?
Yeah, I think this is a big opportunity. I'm going to keep the optimist angle here. In my experience also, I think a lot of big parts and the majority of the financial industry there's been an intention to work with sustainability, and mainly both from the impact and the risk perspective, but the data has been lacking. And it's very difficult to do that in a standardized way when the reporting is not standardized. So I like just going back briefly to ESRS and the CSRD, that once the reporting becomes sort of harmonized and standardized, that will enhance the development of how investors actually can address these issues. I think it will help them sort of focus where to spend the time and effort in terms of risks, impacts, etc. So I think, or at least in my experience from what I've heard, the quite large parts of the finance industry are overwhelmed, yes, but also a bit happy that they're getting some guidance from the regulation in terms of this is the information we need from you now. And I think also the harmonization that brings to the companies is also sort of easing their way of reporting and meeting investors' need. If everyone's asking at least for a standard set of the same information, that will be easier to report rather than you have an investor A wanting to focus on these areas and an investor B wanting something completely different. So I think one opportunity is that this will lead to investors being better to price, like more able to price risks, more better to price in opportunities, and basically being able to price capital in a more efficient way, because we know that this has, like, the finance industry has been working with financial materiality in terms of impact versus financial materiality for quite a long time. But now the impact side could also get into that, which is really cool. And I think also we've seen that the other markets are following, both in terms of the taxonomies and the labeling regulations, in terms of sustainable finance. That's also going to open up some sort of, it's not looking the exact same as the EU. They usually want to do something different, but it's still an opportunity. And that will also be able to price risks better. And I think also the sort of opportunity side in terms of that this is an afterthought product is very important not to forget. I think Deutsche Bank went out a couple of weeks ago saying that they see ESG-related revenue accelerating to, I think it was 1.5 or something, billion euros by 2025, which is significant even for Deutsche Bank. And here in BTS home country, just last week, it was decided that the office of the Swedish Fund Selection Agency they went out and they mentioned that they require applicants to fully incorporate ESG, and they will only focus on Article 8 and Article 9 investments to start with. And that was also billions of Swedish kronas being put into earmarked towards sustainable products, or at least sustainability themed products.
Yeah, that sounds indeed very encouraging. Touching upon certain aspects you mentioned about the coverage of data and the fact that, it is maybe to some extent more difficult to obtain the necessary disclosures from the non-EU companies. Would you like to share, for instance, some your views and challenges with regards to the data estimations?
Yeah. I think it's definitely a very difficult area. There's a lot of debate also, I think, in the investment community, whether estimations are useful or not. So in terms of reporting, they're filling out the gap, absolutely. But when you're evaluating a holding or a stock or some piece of equity, it's not really certain that an estimation using that, if you're evaluating on sustainability impacts, is useful. However, we think that it's better. What I think is going to happen is that if estimations are going to serve as proxies until the markets follow and actually starts providing this information. But I think a general viewpoint has been that investors sort of have to work with the half a blindfold on most of the time, because even if you have data, it's uncertain where it's coming from. It could well be estimated by the investee company as well. I'm hoping for ESRS to go global in that sense.
Well, yes, let's hope for the best. But I think obviously we do have the ongoing work by the ISP to develop the international sustainability reporting standards. And of course, there is cooperation between ISP and EFRAG to trying to ensure as much alignment as possible while considering the fact that both standard setters may, you know, have, I would say, different objectives, and I would say here the scope to cover. However, you know, I think it has been already to some extent positive that we understand that ISB will already make specific also references in its annexes to ESRSs, especially with regards to impact related disclosures. But yeah, it is actually very interesting what you mentioned about ESRSs kind of, you know, going becoming global. I think, you know, the data estimations has been quite a big topic also in terms of the EU taxonomy related disclosures. And there, I think there has been already some work, but surely will be even more by the Platform on Sustainable Finance, indeed trying to ensure that there is as much coverage and data that can be also obtained on the non-EU companies. Now, looking into the future, what do you think will the next few years look like regarding the implementation of SFDR by the industry? What do you see as the main challenges and milestones ahead?
I think it's going to be quite a careful treading forward. Like most regulatory implementations, the first couple of years, there has to be some missteps or some interpretations. And before there's sort of a mainstream benchmark created, that it's going to be a little bit difficult, in both in terms of the challenges we've been over already before. So in terms of data availability, data quality, interpretation, not going outside what you're supposed to in terms of claims and etc., and definition. So I think those are going to, with help of both industry leaders, which are often involved in creating some sort of best practice, and the regulators and the supervisory authorities, with help from those, it's going to get there. We're going to get there, but it might take a while. I also think that going back to the CSRD, it's funny that you always seem to end up at that. Like, that will change the availability of data, and the corporate reporting will change, and so will investors, how they conduct their analysis and their assessments. And I think when this happens, once you can standardize the analysis in some sense, it will become more efficient. It will become easier to work with. You can sort of combine it with the financial analysis as well. And another aspect I think is very important. I'm speaking a bit from a biased standpoint here, but I do absolutely, even from a personal perspective, think it's necessary. And that's the advancement or the facilitation of technological solutions as playing a key role in obviously all of these regulatory. You need to have technical support, technical solutions in place to do this, because it's not meant for one expert or sustainability specialist sitting and doing all this work to him or herself. So I think once you get there as well, when you have the systems in place, then you can actually start working on the value add and the creation and like focusing on the strategy and how to take it further.
Thank you, Nora. I think this nicely leads to the next question I have for you. What is your and Dacia's contribution to the evolution of sustainable finance? And could you also on this occasion tell us a little bit more about Dacia and what you're doing for your clients?
Yeah, we are very honored to be contributing to the evolution of sustainable finance. That seems like a big mission. But in all honesty, I think we can say that we facilitate the implementation of it. So like all technological companies and solutions, we are the ones who free up the time for humans, for asset managers, to do the job that they are best at, which is making investment decisions that are aligned with their strategy. And again, like all technology solutions, we are just allowing humans to focus on the parts which today are too complex to be automated, too creative to be automated, which again, in our field is investment decisions. So we automate and we optimize the legwork that they have to do. We aggregate the data, we calculate the KPIs, we offer the right insights so that they can look at their data through different various lenses and incorporate those insights into their own decision making. We put it all in the reports, into the templates, we generate the documents so that it is, again, easy and smooth to do things which do not require that much creativity, which are much better done by tech than done by humans. And that, of course, allows the humans to put themselves into the place of creativity, of decision making. They can finally not think about calculating the KPIs. They can think, what are they going to do about that? And thinking of the principal adverse impact statements, like those can be very, very hard labor to create because many companies have hundreds of holdings in their portfolios and consolidating all the data from them, verifying them, aggregating, that could take, if you don't automate it, probably days and days and very prone to human mistake. So that is one of the roles we play. And very often people think that automation is something a little bit boring. But if you look at the smaller asset management companies, for them, most of the time, automation is the only way to offer any type of sustainability products. Because when it is so labor intensive, either you have a big team of people and what are you doing with this problem if you have five people, six people maybe in your whole company. And this is where they can use platform like ours so that, again, they unload themselves from the labor-intensive work that doesn't have to be done by a human, and then they can actually keep doing, keep innovating, keep building better investment products. And I'm feeling very happy that we can offer something like that to them, because I feel like that is the contribution that we are making. So we are doing a little bit of backstage work so that they can perform. Another practical example of how we can help them is that there is this template, again, European ESG template from FinDataX, and it consolidates a lot of useful information for the financial products. And we had several clients who have tried to complete it manually, and it took them a lot of time. You can see that it has been a very traumatic experience for them. And then we ask them, how much time did you spend on it right now, that we have built like a pretty questionnaire on top, and at least really took them half an hour per fund. And again, that is a fantastic way to free up humans from the work that they don't have to do manually. And then there is another thing that we are trying to address, and that is that a large part of this industry is still working with a very intransparent tool as ESG scores and ESG ratings. And it's something that we are trying to go a little bit ahead of, because obviously that concept has run into some type of crisis, because there have been studies which show that they do not align, right? They are not reproducible, or they just yield very different results. So we thought, what can we do next about it? What is the next step? And we decided to just go one level deeper, show the origin of the data, show the source of the data, so that again, we can offer our customers the transparency and we can offer them the feeling of control of what they're putting into their reports. I feel like this approach provides information that is necessary for them to be better informed about what goes into the product. They can also prove their claims made in the pre-contractuals by using that approach.
Thank you, Vlada. Would you like to add anything to that, Nora?
I just think it's exciting to sort of, I've been working with this for quite long, and now the data universe is just growing and growing and growing, and the information accessibility is increasing all the time. All less quality, information quality is also increasing. So for me, that's super exciting. And like being able to help investors or facilitate that investor can use this real data in terms of sustainability. But also, for example, I mean, in the financial industry for quite long, you've been working with business involvements, like how does your exposure looks to different industries, etc. What does the revenue streams that we've invested in come from? So you get this extra layer of transparency, not just in terms of the regulation, but in terms of what you've actually established that this is what I'm meant to do. So working it's sort of going, it's going full circle where you can facilitate from the initial screening process to active ownership, divesting if it goes that bad, and all in between. So that's really exciting for me. And I think also the market now is sort of, as I touched on before, that the industry leaders, there's going to become sort of common practices created now in the next couple of years. And that's very excited to be a part of as well, and sort of be on the tech side of those practices and facilitate that.
Thank you, Nora and Vlada, for joining us today and for this insightful conversation and for your time.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
It brings us to the end of this insightful conversation and the end of today's episode. Thank you very much for listening. Do not hesitate to like, follow and share this episode of Sustainability Bridges. URSIF will continue in the next episode to bridge the gap between the policymaking and the practice of sustainable investing with the help of distinguished guests. In the meantime, please visit our website and follow us on social media to stay tuned. See you next time for a new episode of Sustainability Bridges.